Hey, it's Stephanie Staples. Welcome to the show. We're always trying to give you some ideas, some insights, some inspiration for better living. Everything about being a little bit happier, a little bit healthier. And speaking of that, here's your fit tip of the week brought to you by VivacityFitness.ca. Did you know you can reduce the risk of Alzheimer's by about 50% with regular exercise? Why? Exercise helps to break down the sticky protein in the brain that is linked to that awful disease. So start doing it. Yet another reason to exercise. So this is what today I want to talk about. You win some, you lose some. Recently, after speaking at an event, I was approached by this man who was in the audience, and I had met him the year before. We didn't know each other well, but we had chatted and remembered each other. He seemed to be really excited to be speaking to me. He was kind of gushing over my talk, and hey, who doesn't like to be gushed over? I was listening intently when he said something fascinating. It made my world stand still. He said this line, one I am sure I will never forget. It started off good, and then it went downhill from there. He said, "You're just so real, so genuine, so likable, on stage and off. I think it's partly because you're not too beautiful." Oh my God. What? Did I just hear that right? So funny. He kept on speaking, but I didn't hear anything else. It was like the frame froze on that spot. I was fascinated by his statement. Clearly, it wasn't a pickup line, and yes, this man is surprisingly single. Since I'm a curious sort, the characteristic that most gets me into trouble, I just had to know more. "Can I ask you about something?" I began. "I'm not upset or mad or insulted. I'm just curious if you could explain more to me about being not too beautiful." He explained how if people look movie star beautiful, other people often feel too intimidated to talk to them. But how me, on the other hand, I look and act, well, approachable. "Thanks," I think. "Now listen, I'm not blind. I own a mirror. I know what I look like. There's a reason I'm on the radio for sure. I don't look like I should be on the cover of a magazine, and I'm okay with that. I also don't think I repel people with my looks. I think I hover somewhere in the middle. Average, normal, unsomething. Unremarkable, perhaps. Like most of us mere mortals. Listen, I'm okay with that. I truly am. I learned this long ago when I showed a neighbor a family photo we had taken with the kids. She commented on what a nice picture it was. I agreed and I said I liked how everyone looked but me. Have you ever done that? Then she said in her wonderfully awesome way, "Steph, I hate to tell you this, but this is how you look." Oh, that's how I look. Ouch. It's kind of like how no one likes to hear the sound of their own voice. We say, "Hey, I don't sound like that." And then everyone goes, "Yeah, you do actually. But this seems even a little worse." Anyway, that was the moment of starting to own the journey of accepting how I look. I look fine. I look good enough. I clean up okay. In fact, the new word I'm going to own is winsome, which was recently suggested to me. I've never heard that word before, and I had to even look it up. It comes from the old English word win, W-Y-N-N, which means pleasure and delight. Winsome means you're attractive or charming in an open, engaging, and delightful way. I love that word. I'm thinking the category of beautiful is far too pressure-filled and competitive. I think I'm going to live in the winsome world and strive to be at the top of my game there. Which word might you like to own? Men, don't feel left out if handsome seems too big of a stretch for you. Why not go for the ever-pleasing dashing? Attractive in a romantic, adventurous sort of way. Or how about debonair or raffish? I like that one. On another note, while I wasn't insulted by Joe McFlatterer's comment, it did cause me to think harder about how we react to other people's looks, positively or negatively. If a person is a chart-topping 9 or 10, they must be conceited or self-absorbed, right? Are you less likely to befriend them? Do you feel inferior around them? If a person has a PhD and is good-looking and, heaven forbid, is nice too, is that grounds for discrimination? I can recall a time or two when I served judgment papers, and I think we women are typically harder on other women. Don't you be skinny and smart, or we're sure to call you bad words. Prove us wrong by actually being nice and kind, then we might just dislike you for that too. It's a crazy world, Nispa. Phew, well, I'm sure glad I don't have that problem of being too beautiful. I think I'll stick with my plain, approachable, winsome self. And the next time a good-looking, intelligent, nice person passes my way, maybe I'll extend my condolences. You win some and you lose some. Back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. Welcome back to the show. I'm sending a big shout out to Tiberriver.ca, 408 Academy, 1650 Keniston. Even their website smells good. All natural products. Check them out. They're my fave. I am happy to introduce to you a gentleman by the name of Wynn Winger. He's a PhD. He's a pioneer in the fields of creativity and the creative method, accelerated learning, brain and mind development, and political economy. This guy is smart. Mensa member. I can't even hardly spell Mensa, but anyways, a former college teacher, Dr. Winger, is a renowned trainer, and I was lucky enough to meet him not long ago in person and have, I think I had like almost 90 minutes just talk time with you, which I don't know how much that's valued at, but I was pretty happy with our time together. Thank you for joining me on the show. I'm going to call you Wynn. Is that okay?
That's fine. Thank you.
Oh, so you have authored over 50 books, which is pretty substantial in the publishing world, on some interesting titles: Discovering the Obvious, The Einstein Factor, How to Increase Your Intelligence. All of them interest me quite a bit. We're going to have to narrow this conversation down a little bit. But one of your biggest things is CPS, creative problem solving. So tell us your take on creativity.
Well, this is where a good part of my efforts began, because I was teaching in a college where whose students were at the time uninspired, and I was looking for something of interest to pick them up a bit, and got into the literature on creativity at that time. And that's what set things off, because it was then that I posed the proposition that if you have a good method for solving problems, one of the best problems to use that method on would be, of course, the problem of how to create better methods of solving problems.
Which is an of course to you, but it wasn't an of course to me when you challenged me with that a couple weekends ago when we talked. So you asked me about my methodology for teaching, and I told it to you, and then you asked me that question. What if the problem was creating a better method for solving problems? Which I found a great question.
And we've been pursuing that question for 20 or 30 some years here in Project Renaissance, that and it's given us a good many new and potentially better questions, methods rather, and has been of good service to us, and I think would be of great service to anybody who pursued that. And anyone listening could start this himself. If you search your memories and remember a time when you achieved a success despite having a difficult problem, and then if you spell out what you did leading up to that success, if you can then generalize what that was that you did that led to the success and make it into a prescription for others to follow, you will have defined the method that you used to solve that particular difficulty. And then you can use that method as defined in turn on the problem of creating other and better such methods, and you're off and running, and we'll come sitting at your knee to learn these things.
Well, I think it's interesting the fact that you kind of have to delve back, right? You're looking back into your past, and a lot of the times we remember things we didn't do so well. Not too often we look at our successes and dissect those and try and kind of do a reverse methodology of that.
In fact, it's better to do that, because even though we often learn from our failures as well, the basic principle of behavior in the behavioral sciences is that you get more of what you reinforce. And if you spend your time on your failures, you're reinforcing failure. If you spend some investment on what you succeeded at, what you're good at, you're going to be reinforcing that in your life. And, of course, then using what comes out of that as a problem-solving method to create other problem-solving methods is icing on the cake.
Love it. I love the fact, too, when you said you think that people are smarter than they think they are. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, we're both smarter in several regards. One, our conscious mind is only a tiny piece of our overall equipment. We have 2% of the brain by volume involved in conscious thought, which is verbal, word-based thoughts and associations. And the other 98% of your brain associates by sensory perception. which normally we don't put in words, but we are missing out on that. 40 times as much of your brain is operating outside your verbal consciousness compared to your verbal consciousness. And so if you can tap into what's going on in the back of your mind, you are operating with a far greater percentage of your intelligence. And the trick overall anyway is brain integration, because your brain has different sections doing different things. And if you get improved communications between them, then each part of your brain can bring more of its intelligence to bear on what you're doing.
I like that idea. Okay, so how do we integrate our brain more?
Well, one fast way to do that would be to learn to sight read and play music.
Oh, is there any way we can do that quicker? That sounds like a lifetime achievement award there.
Well, actually, it does an awful lot for you, because there are the motor skills involved, there's the aesthetics involved, there's the reading skills involved, all of that woven together and operating at the speed of coordinating our external functioning, at least in that piano playing or instrument playing. Biological evolution drove us as a survival trait to respond quickly to our external stimuli and senses. Tiger, run! And you're off running before you even realize you've seen a tiger in the bush or whatever. There was an evolutionary driver causing us to react with speed to that, but there's no counterpart evolutionary driver to push us to speed in terms of our internal stimuli, like, oh, I think maybe I might be getting a headache, is a very slow process usually, and other internals. And the trick is to get each different part of the brain expressing an activity which has to be coordinated on the outside, like sight reading and playing music, or like an improvisating process that enables even non-musicians to become composers of high quality and original music.
Oh, good. You're speaking with a non-composer, so go ahead. Tell me how.
Well, you sit down with your instrument, or even a bathtub singer, if you rig the mics properly, you start doodling, and you have a recorder going.
Doodling, like coloring doodling?
Yes.
While you're singing?
Yes, or while you're playing the instrument.
Okay.
And you record the results, maybe 3 to 5 minutes at a time initially, and then you play the results back several different times, one time especially when you're being attentive and listening consciously and intentionally to what you've done, and other times as background while you're doing other things, and using these several different levels of the brain to listen to the same passage of music as part of the effect. It's sort of an augmented feedback process that results in the things that you like in your music working. These reinforce and build up in your music. And the things that don't work drop away. And you do this a few minutes at a time over several days, and you find yourself creating passages which are rather neat.
Hmm.
And you'd like to do something more with. And as you continue this process, we're talking about a few minutes a day for 10 days or so, and you're at the point where you're creating entire pieces in pretty elegant form, even if you never studied composition, as most people haven't.
Nothing much more fun than surprising yourself with your own brilliance and creativity. That's always fun. We're talking with Dr. Wynn Winger, back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. It's Stephanie Staples with the Your Life Unlimited quick tip of the week. how to help support your child academically, develop a partnership with your child's teachers and school staff. Talk not only with the teacher, but find out who's who with the paraprofessional staff. It's great to be able to put names to faces and for you as parents, as well as for the staff, get involved in the activities to the extent you can. Ask questions, be an advocate. Check into special services if need be. Make sure your child gets their homework done. You can help your child by setting aside a special place to study, establishing regular time for homework, and removing distractions such as TV and, you know what, the phone. Model continual learning by signing up for a class yourself. Then you can do homework together. Now, you can't get much better modeling than that. All these things can show your child that you value education. And when you do, there's a much better chance that they will too. Welcome back to Your Life Unlimited. If you haven't been to a Mo Mondays yet, you don't know what you're missing. Check out yourlifeunlimited.ca. Go to the events tab and see all our upcoming events. Lots of ideas for inspiration on that site for you as well. So if you like what you're hearing, you don't just have to wait for Sunday mornings. We're trying to give it to you as much as possible. And I'm sending out a big shout out to firstimpressionshairandskin.ca. Always keep you looking and feeling great. I'm speaking with Dr. Wynn Winger. He is an expert on creativity and creative problem solving. And I don't know about you, but we've all got a few problems and I could use a few more methods to solve them. One of your books is one of your 50 books called Discover the Obvious. Love the title. Tell us a little bit about that book.
Well, the obvious part is the title is recognition of the fact that nature has no secrets. We just have selective attention that keeps us from seeing most of what's around us. And most of the really great answers and discoveries that have been made have been very obvious in retrospect. And that's what we're finding with the methods we're using in that book. A lot of our discoveries are obvious in retrospect.
But helpful nonetheless.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Obvious but helpful, right? I'm guessing.
Yes, yes.
So what are some things that we can do to be more in tune to some things that may be obvious but helpful?
Well, just paying attention to what you're perceiving. Bottom line in that actually is noticing what's going on in the back of your mind at various points. When you can stop yourself suddenly and just take an assessment of what were the things that you were just thinking or just paying attention to in the moment before you stopped yourself. As a way of building connections between your conscious mind and the back of your mind, because that's where the action is.
Hmm.
It's the things that go through your back of your mind before they become conscious, and that's where your creativity is. That's where your understanding is.
So, for example, if you would just stop at a red light, and you went, "Hey, what am I actually thinking at this moment?" and just go a little deeper than.
Yeah, you'll still have to remember to restart moving forward when the light changes.
Don't go too deep, eh? But hey, speaking of car, I got to tell this story because when I met you and your wife at this conference, I was asking you, I was telling you guys about my Love Everywhere project, and I asked your wife, what's one of the most beautiful, loving, or kind things, you know, you've seen done lately? And she said it was just today, and she told this beautiful story of what you had done when you were driving there. And do you want me to tell the story or do you want to tell it?
Well, I guess you'd better tell it because I don't remember which incident this was.
Well, she said that you were tired from this long drive and that she was going to drive for a while and that you told her to turn right, but she turned left. And then she drove like 16 miles the wrong way and then had to drive 16 miles back. And then by the time she drove back to where she had kind of taken over, you started to drive again. So she hadn't really saved you any time or any driving at all. But the beautiful thing about that story was that you didn't make her feel bad. You didn't get mad. You didn't yell. And, you know, when we've all been in a car when our spouse or our partner takes a wrong turn or does something, you know, that isn't the brightest, perhaps. And she was just so appreciative and grateful of how gracious you were. Just let her drive the wrong way for however long and come back. So I thought that was a beautiful story, right?
Well, thank you very much. And actually, if you are with a companion, the time you're with a companion is an opportunity, if you want to build, to make a positive difference in how your companion feels from situation to situation. It's sort of like a tournament bridge that you take the hand that's dealt and do the best you can with it. And if that's one of your goals, to have your companion feel good at different points and across a variety of circumstances, then you're building a nice relationship.
Hey, that's a great way to employ creativity to make your relationships better. Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't have room for improvement in that area of their life?
And, of course, you get more of what you reinforce. Thank you, behaviorism, but I have to quote that.
Fair enough. And you have a bit of experience in that realm, too. How long have you guys been married?
I think 43 years.
Holy mackerel.
In that order.
And you are showing no signs of slowing down.
Well, sometimes if you saw me getting out of bed in the morning.
Physically, maybe. But at this conference, you were presenting every session, every day. And then you were doing a 3-day conference after that. So I think that's a great example of passion in action, right? Like, you have something that you're so passionate about, it's like you can't not share it.
That's all too true. I think I'm doing some good, and I get a lot of support and a lot of energy from that.
And I love how your original story was your uninspired students. And so instead of just going, oh, these students are uninspired, you know, to look deeper and ask the questions, what can I do to make them more inspired? And to that end, I think we're going to take a break, but when we come back, you have some advice for teachers and parents to help them be a little bit more inspired, to be a little bit more creative. And as we're into September, it's probably a perfect time for this conversation. So we'll take a break. When we come back, more with Your Life Unlimited. Welcome back to the show. If you like what you're hearing, check out yourlifeunlimited.ca. Lots of resources for you, and I would love to come speak to your team to help them be a little bit happier, healthier, more successful. And you can contact our guest, winwinger.com is his website. Lots of amazing resource for creativity tools and problem-solving tools and how to increase your intelligence tool. It's a resource in itself for sure. Your website is amazing, Win. So we were talking about one of your passions is helping the education system, helping teachers teach better and parents help their kids learn better. So we're in September. It's a perfect time to talk about this. Let's do some tools in that regard.
Okay. Your best tool is a good question.
Oh, that's good. Your best tool is a good question.
Yes. And what the student has to dig into to answer it is what he's reinforcing or what you're reinforcing. If he has to dig into his long-term memory and into his ability to make associations and make sense of things, then that's what gets reinforced. And this is the strength of the Socratic method.
I love it. And you were talking about the intelligence that we are born with. It doesn't have to be status quo. It used to have to be that way, but it's not so anymore.
Yeah, throughout the entire last century, most of the establishment was convinced that you're stuck with a level of intelligence or lack thereof that you're born with. And as it turns out, if the listener will Google today for brain plasticity, or for epigenetics, you'll get an eyeful of what amount to hundreds of different techniques for increasing intelligence. The brain adapts itself to handle the tasks that it's been handling over the previous few weeks. And our intelligence can vary all over the map. This should have been known a century ago. If you take American baseball, for example, what proportion of outcome of play at second base is due to the thrown baseball? It becomes a nonsensical question because it's how the elements in that situation interact that determines the outcome. The runner, the fielder, the second baseman, the condition of the grass, the reaction of the crowd, all of these factors interacting to vary the outcome all over the ballpark. And the same for the various factors in nature and nurture interacting to vary the outcome on intelligence all over the ballpark, which means that the outcome of that interaction can be varied all over the ballpark.
I feel so like what you're, Is kind of the essence of what you're saying, like, I'm going to simplify it here, the more you think, the more you think?
That's correct. We are organisms that are adaptive. We adapt to varying circumstances. That's how we got here in the first place, when conditions were not quite so civilized as they are now, if they are.
Yeah, it depends, eh? And are you equating creativity, like when I talk about increasing your intelligence or increasing your creativity, is that the same question to you, or are they different?
Well, they are somewhat different. The creativity part of that nature versus nurture controversy, the creativity part of that went through ahead of the intelligence part of it, because it's only been the last 2 or 3 years that the epigenetics and brain plasticity phenomena have become widely known, but it was already a generation since Alex Osborne demonstrated, and then Sid Parnes with him, that creativity can also be varied all over the ballpark. That went ahead of our work with intelligence and what's going on now, because people are routinely trained to high levels of creativity. It's still a little less than routine for intelligence building, but there are a lot of methods floating around now, that most of which actually work. Some work better than others. And one of them I would recommend would be that sight reading and playing of music, or getting better at that, to force better communication between the different parts of our brain.
I like with the two words you put together, intentional creativity. You don't see those words put together too often.
Well, that's, I guess, because for thousands of years, people assumed that you were either born creative or not.
Yes.
And so it would have been nonsensical or unnecessary to supply the word intentional to the concept of creativity. But as it turns out, of course, things are very much otherwise.
So what are some of your favorite creativity tools to help people problem solve better?
Well, my favorite tool is the back of the mind stuff again. In this case, pictures. We have imagery. We all have the image going on, even if we're unaware of it. I've found poor people that I've, over the thousands that I've worked with, over the several dozen years I've been involved with this, poor people that could not, in the time that I had available to work with them, could not get to actually seeing their mental pictures. But I think if I'd had a few more minutes with each of those, I would have had them too. But we've had this experience of thousands of people, despite the common belief that a third of all people can't visualize. And it turns out that image streaming itself is a specific technique for enabling people to visualize. That's one of our contributions.
And you have a cool one also. Is it called Crab Apple? Did I get that right?
Yes. it was a crab apple tree that we first explored that technique with a group of mine here, and got results. And so it was named, idiosyncratically at least, the crab apple process.
Okay, let's talk about
what
that.
What it consists of is a combining of internal and external processes in our imagery. It's a projective technique, just like the Rorschach test is a projective instrument. In Rorschach, the meaningless ink blots, people imagine seeing things in those ink blots the way children see faces or animals in the clouds. And the psychologists, especially the classical psychoanalytical professionals were using it. If a patient was wrestling with a problem, they would have the patient look at the ink blots and identify things he saw in the ink blots, and a lot of what he identified would actually be in relationship to his problem. He could talk about the problem then, and in terms of what he saw in that ink blot, and get fresh insight on that problem. So that became a classical standard of treatment. I'm thinking of using essentially the same kind of process with Rorschach for solving objective problems such as community issues and problems, world issues and problems, scientific, technical problems and issues, but I haven't found anyone yet that has enough experience with Rorschach. I want it to be as clean and as easy to use and as accurate as possible when I do introduce it.
Let's bring it down a level. We don't want to solve the world's problems today. We just want to solve one, maybe one issue that we've got bugging us this week. So if with your crabapple technique, you just kind of explain that in a nutshell.
Okay. You look around wherever you are now until with one question or problem in mind. And you will find that one particular object or feature of the space around you somehow comes into your field of view and holds your attention. Pay attention to what it is that's gotten your attention there or come to mind. And what you do next is to make a list of the adjectives, the adjectival descriptions that can be made of that object. What color is it? What's the texture? What's it look like? What's its shape? What's maybe 20, 30 different adjectival descriptions of that object. And you say to yourself or say to the recorder, you say to your partner, you say to your notepad, this typewriter or this fluorescent light or this whatever the object is somehow reminds me of this problem because, and then you try to fill in that sentence, fill in that blank. And then you go through your list of adjectival descriptions. It's smooth except it's one corner or whatever. And then you say, this somehow reminds me of this facet of my problem or this problem. And you try to fill in that blank.
All right.
And sooner or later, doing that with those various descriptions, you hit your aha as to what that problem was about.
And it's kind of one of those things, I think you have to just try it. You can hear about it or read about it, but you kind of have to try it before you go, oh, I kind of get it now, and it has potential to work. We're going to take a break if you want to know more about those creativity strategies. WinWinger.com. Back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. Always my pleasure spending the hour with you. Thanks so much, Dr. Wynn Winger has been our guest. Dr. Wynn, if there was just one thing that you would want people to know, what would that one thing be?
That you are brighter than you think. The listener is brighter than he thinks. Brighter than he thinks he is. You've got unlimited potential. We're finding more and more about how to tap into that potential and use it. And it's a good thing. And
great. Love it. You're smarter than you think. Thanks for spending your time with us. As usual, it's Stephanie Staples encouraging you to live your life unlimited.